Alright, well, welcome everyone. Thank you for inviting me today. I've been asked to talk on the Four Noble Truths, the Chattaro Arya Satya. You have to understand about the Arya Satya. We know they're the core of the Buddha's teaching. But we have to be clear that the only way to truly understand the four Arya Satya is through the practice of meditation. We don't want to try to take a shortcut just to understand them intellectually. Sometimes we learn about Buddhism, so all of you, I'm sure, have learned about Buddhism for many years. But then instead of putting it into practice, we try and find the truth in the books. So we hear the Buddha taught the Four Noble Truths. And so we pick up a Buddhist book and we try to find. Or we invite a monk to explain to us the four Arya Satya. But you can't explain them. That's not what they're for. Well, I can explain to you today something about them. But the best thing I can do is to explain to you how you have to see them for yourself. In fact, it's more than each of the four Arya Satya has a duty associated with it. It's not about just knowing the Four Noble Truths. Knowing is for the First Noble Truth. So we have suffering, the cause of suffering, the cessation of suffering, and the path that leads to the cessation of suffering. These are the four Arya Satya, the Four Noble Truths. But only the first one, each one of them has a truth, and then kicca and katta. We call kicca and katta. Kicca means that which you have to do in regards to that truth. Each truth has a duty associated with it. So kicca is you must do it. Katta means you've done it. So in regards to each one of them, you only really understand them once you have accomplished the task associated with that truth. So the task associated with the first truth is parinyaya. We have to know completely. This is the First Noble Truth. And so this becomes our basic practice and our basic undertaking in Buddhism is to understand suffering. Now we think, well, we all know suffering, right? When we have pain, we know it's pain. In fact, we know the cause of it. The cause of it is sitting still. And we know that to escape suffering, you just move. When you don't sit still, there's no suffering. To escape suffering, get up, move, change your position. This isn't dukkha satya. This isn't the truth of suffering. There are four ways we can look at suffering. Well, there's many different ways. One way of looking at suffering is to break it into four. This is very useful for understanding what exactly we mean by the truth of suffering, dukkha. There's what we call dukkha vedana. This is how most people understand suffering. They think suffering is a feeling. When you sit like this, it feels painful after some time. This is suffering that you can escape. You just change your position, get up and walk, do something else. If you're sick, you take medicine. If you're with someone you don't like, go somewhere else. Change, fix the problem. This is dukkha vedana. This isn't the dukkha satya. You understand this. If this is your way of dealing with suffering, to try and run away from it, you don't understand suffering. But in our lives, there is the aspect of our lives that is unpleasant, that we can't avoid. Now, life can be pleasant, but there is the aspect that is unpleasant. Constipation, even having to go use the toilet, you know, hunger, thirst. You can't escape these. These come back again and again. They're a part of life. Old age, sickness, death. These things you can't run away from. You can't fix them. You can't fix this problem. Most people in this world don't see that. They don't think about those. They put those aside. They don't try and solve that problem. They stick to what they can solve, and the rest they forget about it. As a result, when true suffering comes, they can't deal with it. Now, for Buddhists, or for people interested in the Buddhist teaching, they tend to have seen something, either through learning and being able to appreciate suffering on a deeper level, or through some tragedy of their own. So people who aren't Buddhist will come to the Buddha's teaching because something bad happened to them. Something happened so unpleasant that they couldn't fix it. It was pain so terrible that they had no cure. Or they start to see that they see other people getting old, sick, dying. They hear about the suffering of the tsunami or the flooding or war, that kind of thing. And they think to themselves, this could come to me. They realize that this is not something you can just keep running away from. And so this is what turns people to develop their spiritual nature. People turn to spirituality because they try to find another solution. Rather than fixing the problem, they change the way they look at it. This is why people come to practice Buddhism. Whether through being a Buddhist and learning about it from a monk, or through learning about it from life and seeking out a Buddhist teacher. So that's the second type of suffering. It's called dukkha sabhava. Sabhava means it's a part of nature. It's you can't change it. You can't get rid of it. It's there. So then when people come to practice meditation, they start to see what is called dukkha lakkhana. And so this comes from the second one. When you see that you can't change suffering, you start to look and see, well, what do I do? How do I... You try to find a better way. You know? And you look inside and you start to see that actually suffering is a part of everything. What this means is anything has the potential to cause you suffering if you hold on to it. Why? Because it's uncertain, unpredictable. You start to see about everything that you observe, and maybe not even through meditation. As a Buddhist, through contemplating life, you start to see that your house is impermanent, your family is impermanent, even your own body is impermanent. And therefore you can't be satisfied with it. You can't cling to even your own body, even your own mind, and think it's always going to be a refuge for you. And so you start to see that this is a characteristic of things. Suffering isn't because of some specific circumstance. Suffering is because of your attitude towards things, how you react to things. It's because intrinsically nothing is worth clinging to. You see the characteristic of impermanence. So everything is unstable. You see, you can't actually find something, not in this world, not in samsara, that is going to be stable or satisfying or controllable. So this is where real spiritual progress comes from. And this is what if I have time to show you how to meditate, we can go through this and start to see anicca, dukkha, anatta. And start to, rather than fix the problem, start to fix ourselves so that we stop reacting and stop getting upset about things. But that's still not the truth of suffering. A person can cultivate this, what we call vipassana, and still not see the truth of suffering. The truth of suffering comes once you see the characteristic of suffering to the extent that you come to an understanding. It's not even proof, but your mind has sufficiently proved to itself that your mind finally says, nothing is worth clinging to. Suffering is inherent in everything that arises. Nanyatrang dukkha sambodhi, nanyatrang dukkha nirujati. Nothing but suffering arises, nothing but suffering ceases. That sounds kind of dismal. What it means is there's nothing, no thing can truly make you happy. Everything that arises is not happiness. Happiness doesn't come from something that arises. If your happiness is dependent on any one thing, you're going to suffer. Because it's unpredictable, it's unsatisfying, it's uncontrollable. And once the mind appreciates this, realizes that this is the moment, this is how the attainment of Nibbana occurs. A person realizes Nibbana when they finally see that everything is, they realize, clearly see, enough so that their mind lets go, that there's nothing worth clinging to. So that's dukkha satya. That's the most important one. The second one is associated with it. We know the cause of suffering. Now, there's this idea that the cause of suffering is our past lives. We suffer in this life because we wanted to be born. The tanha that makes you want to be born again. So once you're born in this life, you can't avoid suffering. Now, to some extent, that's true. You can't stop the suffering from coming, unless you kill yourself, in which case you have to start over again. But suffering is actually the in one sense, it's from a past life. Now, in terms of meditation, of course, it's nothing like that at all. The cause of suffering is because we cling to any one thing. As I said, it's not actually our experiences that cause us suffering. It's our reactions to them. It's our attachments to them. We need them to be this way. If they're not this way, we have to fix them. If we have a friend or a family member who is acting the way we don't want, we have to fix it. We're always trying to fix our problems rather than just accept them. We're trying to always have plans. We want this, we want that. We're trying to attain happiness. And because of that, we get what we want, and then we want more. Or we don't get what we want, and we suffer. We cultivate addiction. So the real cause of suffering is our desire. We know this. But how this relates to the first one is, once you see that these things that we cling to are not worth suffering, all of these plans that we have, all of these ambitions, all of these goals and wants and needs, once we observe them, and we observe how getting them doesn't actually make us satisfied, how it just makes us want more, slowly we stop wanting them. This is what meditation is for. Now, meditation is not meant to be entirely pleasant. It's meant to challenge you. Meditation is about seeing the things, the ordinary aspects of experience, everything that we experience right now, but to experience it a new way, rather than judging it, rather than reacting to it, which is what we always do. We like some things, we dislike things, we react. We wish we were somewhere else, we want to stay here forever. We like this, we don't like this, we're bored, we're frustrated, we're worried. All of these reactions, we start to see that this is the cause, that we're creating suffering for ourselves. We start to look at reality in a new way. So the second noble truth, the kicca, is to abandon it. You abandon craving when you see suffering. You see that anicca, dukkha, anatta, how this works, you see anicca, dukkha, you give up craving for it. All of these things, everything. Think of something that you like, something that you want. The claim that the Buddha made is if you look at it clearly enough, if you see it clearly, you won't even want it. You won't have to say, no, I can't have that. You won't want it. We have this, what's called nibbida. And the Buddha is saying, atta nibbindati dukhe. That means you get bored of it because it's suffering. You get bored of suffering. You think, oh, this is, you know, coconut juice is really nice. You think, well, this makes me happy to have coconut juice. But then if you're very mindful, and this only comes through meditation, this is why I say the Four Noble Truths, understanding them intellectually is nothing like understanding them through meditation. If you're mindful enough, you start to see the coconut juice doesn't actually make you happy. Any pleasure that comes from it is completely tied to desire. And because it's tied to desire, you want more. And you have this irrational need to have it. And then when you don't get it, you're disappointed. And you have this craving, this stress associated with it. So that's the cause of suffering. The cessation of suffering, and so the kicca for it, as I said, is to give it up. You give up the desire. And that comes through seeing suffering. The cessation of suffering is when there's no more craving. So the cessation of suffering, the kicca, the duty for that is simply to see it clearly. Satchi kattabang. Satchi means with your own eyes. Achi comes from aki, I think. So it means with your eyes. To make clear with your own eyes. Something like that. This refers to Nibbana. Nibbana, of course, is of all the four, it's the hardest one to understand. It's not all that complicated, but it's nothing like anything. By its very nature, it's unique. So the Buddha said, with the cessation of craving comes the cessation of suffering. With this, now in a mundane sense, we understand this, that if you don't want something, well, you won't get stressed if you don't have it. Simple. But that's in a mundane sense. In the meditation practice, this happens. This is what I said, nibbida. You become bored of it. You stop fussing about things. You become content. So if you sit here long enough, you'll become discontent. And you'll wish you were somewhere else. You'll want something else. You'll think about when you can get what you want, how you can get what you want. You'll be planning and living in the future, in the past. Discontent arises out of wanting, so you'll have suffering as a result. Now, through vipassana practice, eventually you can just be content. You're here, you're sitting, there's no real problem, and so you're content with whatever you have. This only comes through, but this is the mundane cessation of suffering. It's very important, but it's not Nibbana, it's not the Arya Satcha. Dukkha Nirodha Arya Satcha. Dukkha Nirodha Arya Satcha. When you come to that realization that everything, there's nothing, and it's not intellectual, you will see clearly again and again and again and again until finally the mind says enough and it will let go. And the mind won't go out. The mind won't seek sights, sounds, smells, tastes, feelings, or thoughts. And there'll be a cessation. So Nibbana is called the cessation of suffering. Because there will be no seeing, no hearing, no smelling, no tasting, no feeling, thinking. We won't even have a memory of it. It's that much cessation. The person who has experienced Nibbana can't tell you about it. They have no memory of it. But they have something has changed, that they've experienced true peace. They've let go. They've experienced that letting go completely. And this is why we say ineffable. It's not something you can really understand or explain. Something you have to experience. The Fourth Noble Truth is one that we're mostly familiar with, the path. So we know it is the path. It's the Eightfold Noble Path. I don't think it's worth going into too much detail with each of these, but they go in order, you know. So the path is... We always say it's meditation practice. You practice mindfulness, it's the path to Nibbana. But That's only in a mundane sense. In a mundane sense, yes, you have to practice meditation, but in an ultimate sense, what's really happening is it's going in order. You have right view. Through meditation practice, you start to have right view. Rather than thinking coconut juice is going to make me happy, you see coconut juice as coconut juice. It's a seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, feeling, thinking. That's it. It's only experiences. You start to see this clearly. You start to see that this is anicca, dukkha, anatta. You see it without any judgment, without liking or disliking, without attachment or possessiveness or ego or conceit. And so then come the other seven. Then there's right thought as a result of that. Your thoughts are free from craving. You know, normally we sit here and wanting this, wanting that, or anger, bored, frustrated, pain from sitting so long. Or we have delusion, conceit or arrogance. I like what I'm hearing, I don't like what I'm hearing, this is good, this is bad, I am good, I am bad. I know all this already, that kind of thing. So, but through meditation, all of those don't arise. We have no self-consciousness, no self-conceit, no self-esteem, only experience. Then there's right thought. From right thought, of course, comes right speech. As a result, the things we say, right action, the things we do, right livelihood, how we live our lives, is all pure because it all comes from our thoughts. It all comes from our intentions. When our minds are pure, of course, our actions are going to be pure. How would we do something cruel or unkind if our minds are pure? So this is right speech, right action, right livelihood. From that, our whole being, this is how we get right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration. Because we live our lives in the right way, all of our actions are towards contentment, peace, happiness. And so we have right effort. Our minds become more pure. We work to purify the mind. From stopping unwholesome from arising, getting rid of unwholesome that has already arisen, cultivating wholesomeness in our minds, cultivating patience. Right now you all have to cultivate patience as you listen, as you try and sit still, as you deal with the pain and the distraction in the mind. And to hold on to the wholesomeness, to keep your mind wholesome, to keep your mind clear. Right effort, so then right mindfulness, then your mind will be aware, this is this, this is this, aware of things as they are. Grasping, this is not coconut, this is seeing, this is touching, this is tasting. And then will come right concentration. So it's actually a progression. With right concentration, your mind will be fixed and focused on the three characteristics. You will see impermanence. You will feel when you touch something, you will feel the touching arise and cease. And the seeing, the hearing, the smelling, the tasting, feeling, thinking, arising and ceasing. You will see anicca, dukkha, anatta. And then there comes samma jnana, samma vimutti, the right knowledge and wisdom, which is the Four Noble Truths, and then vimutti, which is cessation of suffering. So that's how it goes, and that's actually still mundane. The Arya Satya is the moment when all of that comes together, and when your mind is perfect. When your mind is perfect, this means one moment sitting here, where your mind is perfect. That's all it takes, and you can't be conceited and think you have that understanding of the noble truth. The noble truth of the path, one moment, if you ever have that moment, the next moment is Nibbana. The next moment is cessation. That's how powerful it is. The true path is the focusing the mind on Nibbana. letting go of samsara. That's the path. Just that one moment is called the Arya Satya. So it's actually, well, it's an easy, it's quite a simple subject. There's only four truths. They're not hard to understand. But on the other hand, it's quite difficult in the sense that it's not something that you can understand intellectually. You have to put it into practice. You have to see these through the practice. And they're not some faraway thing that maybe one day you'll understand. You can start to understand them in a mundane sense just through the practice of vipassana meditation. So that's what I'd like to do, is sort of lead you through vipassana. That's what I've been asked to do. So we'll go through basic meditation practice, and I'll try and explain how this helps us come closer to the Arya Satya. So if I can have everyone close your eyes. And we're going to start upon the mundane path. The mundane path starts with right view. So the first thing we have to understand in order to gain right view is, what is the nature of reality? What is real? Is my body real? In what way is my body real? And you start to see, or you learn from a teacher, and then you verify it, that actually the only thing that really exists is experience. Seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, feeling, thinking. The body is only something you think up in your mind. When you see a certain shape, you say that's the body. Or when you feel a certain feeling, you say that's the body. But actually it's just the feeling, or it's just the seeing. It's just the thinking. Those are what's really real. In the beginning, even that might be hard to understand, so that's why we begin to teach mindfulness. We start with sati. You have to look. If you want to see, you have to look. It's a basic principle. So what we're going to do is look. How do we look? We use what is called sati, which means to remember or to remind yourself. So we pick a word based on our experience, and we remind ourselves, that's what I'm experiencing. A simple way of doing this, we use a simple object, the stomach. It's part of the body, but it's the clearest movement of the body when you're sitting still. So if you want, you can put your hand on your stomach. And when the stomach rises, just say to yourself in your mind, rising. And when it falls, say falling. Rising. Falling. In the beginning, all we're trying to do here is experience something from beginning to end. Watch it arise, watch it cease. And start to get a feel for what really exists. That's the first step in vipassana meditation. So we start with the stomach, watch it rising and falling, and then we apply this to everything else we experience. If you feel pain, then you remind yourself, pain, pain. If you feel happy, then you remind yourself, happy, happy. If you feel calm, you remind yourself, calm, calm. And you just stay with it until it goes away. Once it's gone, or if it doesn't go away and you've had enough of it, come back again to the stomach. and continue with rising, falling. If thoughts arise, thoughts about the past or the future, good thoughts or bad thoughts, remind yourself thinking, thinking, thinking. And we're not trying to stop the mind from thinking, we're just trying to remind, to understand it and see it as it is. We're trying to see what is, what is the nature of what is. If emotions arise, liking or disliking, boredom, sadness, worry, depression, fear, distraction, drowsiness, doubt, remind yourself, whatever it is, liking or liking, disliking, disliking, drowsy, drowsy, distracted, distracted, doubting, doubting. Try and keep your mind objective. Try to learn to see things as they are. This is how we get closer to seeing the truth, by keeping our mind objective, training our mind to be objective, non-judgmental. If you see anything, you can say seeing, seeing, or the noises you hear, you can say hearing, hearing, hearing. If there's smelling or tasting or feeling, you can say smelling, smelling, or tasting, tasting. And when it's gone, or when you've had enough of it, come back again to the stomach and continue with rising, falling. This is the technique we use to try and see things clearly. Let's do it together now for a few minutes. So if you practice in this way, you'll start to see things as they are. You'll start to experience sounds as just sounds, rather than judging them or identifying them as this or that. And then you'll start to see how they work together. You'll see that your mind is not under your control. You'll see that your body, you'll stop trying to control things, and you'll just try to experience them. You'll learn to just appreciate experience rather than try to control it. As a result, you'll start to see impermanence. You'll see that it's unstable. It's unpredictable. And therefore, it causes you suffering when you cling to it. When you have expectations, wanting it to be this way or that way. Because you can't control it. And then that slowly, slowly, you'll come to the realization that this is all not worth clinging to, and your mind will let go. This is really how the Four Noble Truths work. So that's very briefly what I teach, how we practice. It's an understanding of the Buddha's teaching based on the Four Noble Truths. Does anyone have any questions? Anything they'd like to talk about? That's all I have to say, unless you have something you want to talk about. Thank you for putting up with, for being patient with me and listening very patiently. You must have some questions, no? No questions, then that's all. Thank you. I wish you all, through the merit of listening appreciatively, attentively, may you all be able to put into practice the Buddha's teaching and come to realize the truth of the Arya Satya and attain Nibbana for yourselves. Thank you. Sadhu.